Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees. So I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in two orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply.
From Wondery.
How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing pretty good, Justin. How are you feeling tonight?
I'm doing great. We have some announcements and some updates, correct?
By the time people hear this, the Golden State Killer will have started serving his life sentence. We had covered him in the past, and I think he was one of the biggest crime stories of the last couple decades. Joseph James DeAngelo, 74 years old. And he recently arrived at his new home, which is North Kern State Prison in California.
As some would call it, his forever home.
I bring this up because this is a guy that affected hundreds of people. And I know that at least you and I mean, we're happy he's locked up. There might have been some people that wished he had been put to death. But this was a pretty satisfying trial, hearing from people who had the ability to speak in court with him present and really let him know how he affected their lives. And so he had to put faces to names and hear stories of family members or victims who had stories to tell. And so for me, this is quite an accomplishment for a guy that no one thought could be caught, or at least many people didn't think he'd be caught. Now he's serving that time, and we fully expect him to die in prison. And despite the way he's acted, he's actually a fairly healthy guy. So I'm expecting him to live quite a while in prison.
I was always impressed with how they ended up catching him using DNA profiles and isolating it down from that. It's just a phenomenal undertaking by law enforcement and so many other groups and departments.
It's hard to believe that was just a couple of years ago. Once again, if you want to see us at CrimeCon, whether you're in the United States or you're in the UK, use our code GenY21. Be there, please.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Now, Aaron, you made a social media post about case suggestions for whether something was homicide or suicide, and you know, a case where people really felt that law enforcement might have gone in the wrong direction. And you had a suggestion from Robin Warder, and he suggested tonight's episode. Now, that said, he has covered this case on his podcast, The Trail Went Cold. I know he did an exceptional job on it. I'm hoping that we can bring a lot more discussion. So with that, what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight, we're talking about the mysterious death or murder of Hugh de la Plaza, who lived in San Francisco, and he was age 36 when he died.
This happened June 2nd, 2007 in San Francisco. Now, what do we know about Hugh?
Hugh was a French immigrant, a dual citizen of the United States and France. He had no siblings. He had two parents, Francois and Murray. He had spent the last 4 years of his life living in the apartment that he was at the time that he died. And he was working at Leapfrog, which if you're a parent, you know what Leapfrog is.
I had to look this up because I had no clue.
It's a children's educational company, and he was a sound engineer and apparently a very good one.
So they make educational apps and software for kids.
As well as toys.
Yeah. And when you do that, you need to produce sounds, you need audio, you need narrations, what have you. And he's the guy that did it all for this company.
One of the things that he really was into was philosophy. People would say that he would just write down philosophical thoughts or quotes.
I think this was so French of him, by the way. So, yeah.
He was not tied down with anyone. He was a bachelor. And he was actually saving up to buy property in Buenos Aires. But at the time, you know, he had many friends. So he would go out to the bars or clubs or go riding on his motorcycle. But he was also dating a lot. And they said it wouldn't be a surprising thing for him to date a different woman every day of the week.
He had gotten out of a long-term relationship with a woman named Melissa Nix. After that, he just wanted to live a little. He just wanted to embrace his seductive French side, I guess. And he's living the life in San Francisco. They have a very thriving social scene there. He's young. He's doing his thing.
So this is Hayes Valley, San Francisco. The area that he was in, they said, was a pretty nice area, but it bordered, I guess you could say, a more dangerous area. I hate to label things this way, but it really just has to do with the amount of crime that was happening in these areas.
This is pretty typical of most big cities. You have a divide between rich areas and everywhere else, and it's considered rough. Again, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't walk around there and you're going to be murdered. Definitely. It's just, it's something that comes into play later in the story.
So on the night of June 1st, because this extends into June 2nd in the morning, Oog is out with friends at Club Underground SF, which is San Francisco, obviously. He's celebrating a promotion that he got at work, and he had gotten to the club around 10:30 that night. Of course, people were asking him, how did your date go? Because he had been out on a date. But he said, well, it didn't go that great, and we're probably just going to be friends.
Oog has been out on a date with a lady earlier in the night. They had dinner and drinks, and now he's showing up to the club to have more drinks with his friends. Let's just say that he's probably already a couple drinks in before he even starts his night.
One of the people at the club, a friend of his, also a coworker, is Neil Zarama, and they made plans to go on a motorcycle ride the next day. Throughout the night, he's joking around and drinking, having a great time, but eventually it's time to go home, and as he's leaving, he joked that he was going to find a lady to spend the night with.
Aaron, at this time in 2007, San Francisco was having a pretty violent year. Their city had reported over 100 murders, and that was the highest it's been in 7 years. It's a 20% increase in homicide. This same week, a homicide detective is going to say that he's had to respond to 3 of 5 reported crimes, reported murders, actually. So things are happening. Just happens to be this night where Oog is drinking with friends. And what time do they decide to call it quits that night?
About 1:45 in the morning.
Now, a guy walking home at night in San Francisco, it just depends on the area you're in and how street smart you are. I would say that walking home drunk or intoxicated, you might not have all your wits about you, but he's going home.
He got home around 2:06. There is some evidence of this because there was a security camera that faced out to the residences along Linden Street there.
It's like a sidewalk that the security camera is pointed at, and Oog is, I would say, probably walking pretty slowly, and he only shows up on like 1 or 2 frames of this security camera. He's in and out of the picture very quickly, and it doesn't show the front of his residence. It's pointed down the street, so he disappears as he turns towards his apartment. So it doesn't show his apartment. It just shows the street in front of it.
You can find an image of this online. He literally looks like a shadowy figure. You can't really make out any details or anything. But at 2:06, he gets back home and he prepares something to eat and gets on his computer until around 2:38 in the morning. He's visiting dating websites. But then something happens, and it's after 2:38 that Oog dies. Let's talk about when the authorities first hear about this, Justin.
One of the neighbors, Orion Denley, reports seeing blood in front of Oog's apartment, on his steps and in front of his door. And so police show up and they have probable cause because there's blood all over his front porch, essentially. And they kick in his front door because his front door is locked and deadbolted. So they have to force their way in. And that's when they discover the body of Oog.
Orion had said, when asked about what he knew, he had heard a loud thud that shook his wall and then heard the door open and close and then slam. And then he heard someone running down the stairs. So the report seems to indicate that Oog's door was being opened and closed or opened and shut loudly a few times, and that there were stomping footsteps, but there was no reports of any yelling or screaming.
They find Oog in his apartment. There is blood everywhere. There is blood trailing from the steps in front of his apartment to the door. There is blood pooled up all on the inside of the door. Then there's drops of blood trailing throughout the apartment. There's smears of blood next to the light switch, as if he was grabbing at something, trying to just survive. There's a TV that's knocked over. There's glass that's been shattered, I think, from the entertainment center. His laptop has blood on it. His cell phone is found on the coffee table next to the laptop. It's undisturbed.
If you just read this account, it almost sounds like maybe he was attacked in his apartment, but the apartment was deadbolted. Obviously, this means that there might be another possibility, Justin.
Well, the lead investigator starts talking to the neighbors and asking if Oog was suicidal or depressed. The morning of, right after they find the body, questions of suicide are already being fielded to any neighbors or eyewitnesses.
And this is a real question, right? I mean, why would they bring up suicide?
Well, according to the investigators and the medical examiner, they're looking at this crime scene and they notice that the blood evidence shows that he wasn't moving very fast because it was large drops of blood hitting the floor and not elongated or oblong shapes. So he wasn't rushing or struggling, according to them. And they see that nothing appears to be stolen or missing from the apartment, nothing blatant. So they don't think robbery is a motive. And they notice that there's no blood on his cell phone. He made no attempt to call for help. He made no attempt to call out for help. They're going with, well, he could have stabbed himself to death.
The medical examiner, Dr. Azar, she seemed to indicate that that was a real possibility. She could not determine his manner of death.
His watch had been torn off his wrist and was found smashed underneath his body. He had at least 3 stab wounds, one in his abdomen, one in his chest, and one on his neck. So this is how they're rolling with their investigation. I mean, they're saying that it appears to be a homicide, but within hours, their theory has flipped to suicide because the door was locked and it appears that he was moving slowly and there was no struggle. TV being knocked over, broken glass, the apartment in slight disarray, no sign of struggle because he was moving slowly in the apartment, Aaron.
Dr. Venus Azar, the medical examiner, she seemed to lean, at least, you know, when I read the information, it seems like she's leaning towards suicide because, like you said, it didn't appear that he was running away from anyone. I feel like this is a little short-sighted. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a narrow view. And then on top of that, you have Antonio Casillas, who was the lead investigator in this case. He seemed to indicate that he was looking into the suicide angle as well.
He's asking the neighbors about Oog's mental state. He asks if there's any blood trailing away from the apartment down the street. There is not. He says, you know, when an assailant stabs somebody, they usually end up injuring themselves and then trailing blood away from the crime scene. Also, that security camera footage does not show anyone running away from the apartment or anyone even going to the apartment, at least in that small time frame, except for Oog.
But we have to remember, it's only showing one angle. So it doesn't actually cover the entire apartment building.
Let me add to that. Oog was walking in front of the camera, drunk and slowly, and he only showed up on like one frame. So if somebody actually ran from the apartment, I don't know. They could be running in between frames. If it's only taking a snapshot every 5 seconds, you could be in and out of that camera's line of sight within 5 seconds. It's a possibility.
Justin, the other indication that they have it, that they're leaning towards suicide, is that there's no murder weapon found. So maybe, since the apartment was deadbolted, Oog just cleaned the weapon and either pushed it into the ground outside or cleaned it and put it in the sink, because there was a knife in the sink.
Yeah. I don't exactly follow that logic, but you have to think, if somebody took their own life with a knife, where's the knife? And they can't find one. And since there is blood on his front doorstep, they assume that he stabbed himself, went outside and chucked the knife, or went inside and washed the knife off with three stab wounds, two of which would have probably killed him within a minute. But he has the wherewithal to go clean the knife off. Got it. Cool. Yeah, I totally buy that as a angle for suicide. Hashtag sarcasm.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
In other words, Hugh de la Plaza, even though he had a very good life going for himself, he decided he was going to take his own life. And so he grabbed a knife, went outside of his apartment, stabbed himself in 3 different places, and then went about inside of his apartment for a little bit till he collapsed. But that was, of course, after he cleaned the knife off and hid it expertly. He was just creating what? A mystery for everyone, for the podcasters to try and solve?
You know, when you're bleeding out, sanitizing your own suicide device is a priority to you. Cleaning off the knife that you used to stab yourself is going to be on the forefront of your mind. Absolutely. I'm 100% buying this investigator's claim to the knife was cleaned. This same investigator would go on to interview Melissa Nix, Oog's ex-girlfriend, who was on the other side of the country when she heard about this situation. And she called the police station to get more information, and they would not answer her questions. So she flew into town. And when she found out that Hugh had been murdered, she was the one that called his parents back in France and let them know that their son was dead days after the fact, because law enforcement didn't bother to notify next of kin or the parents. But this investigator is talking to Melissa and asking her questions about Hugh. And it comes out that he is into Japanese culture. He's into samurai culture, I guess. And they ask her about harikari, the ritual practice of a samurai taking their own life, where they stab themselves in the stomach and then press their knife or their sword across, gutting themselves. And this investigator claims that it's because of his questioning of Melissa 4 days after the fact that that's how he came up with the suicide angle, is because of her explaining to him about Oog's, I guess, obsession with samurai culture. He says he never thought it was suicide up until that point. Not even the morning of when he found the body and was questioning the neighbors, asking them if Oog was suicidal. No, he claims it's 4 days later.
Many people do not buy his explanations because he has talked about this. Now, I'll give him some credit for at least trying to address the questions, but it is suspicious that Dr. Venus Azar and Antonio Casillas were dating at the time Oog de la Plaza was murdered.
I mean, you can date people that you work with. That's not a conflict of interest at all. I know that they would never let their emotions get in the way.
Well, for me, it really just depends on the results. And the results in this case so far, sure, we can say, wow, this is mysterious. How did Oog die? Was he murdered? Was this suicide? What happened? But when you have people who are tasked with understanding exactly what happened here, and there's an obvious conflict of interest, and they're not getting results, I have a problem with it too.
Obviously, Oog's mother and father have traveled to the States to check into this, and it's to their surprise that they are informed that their son has taken his own life. Again, Melissa's looking into this, Oog's ex-girlfriend. They're not talking to her at first, so she actually called a local crime reporter and asked, have you heard anything about my ex-boyfriend's case? And he's the one that informs her, I don't do suicides. That's when it's really setting in that the police are treating this not as foul play at all. The investigator, like I said, he's working 5 different cases, 3 actively. And then he gets a call about Oog. They're overwhelmed with cases. I know that they're doing their best. I know that they're trying to solve every single case. I know that their manpower is short. Their resources are limited. But I don't know if anyone else can see the pattern here. But sometimes when you have a stack of dishes up to the ceiling, you might not clean everyone as careful as you should. And in this case, they're looking at the blood evidence, as they say, and saying, well, he wasn't moving around very fast, so he wasn't in a struggle. Or nothing was stolen, so robbery wasn't a motive. No one showed up on the camera, so therefore, no one else was in the area. Yet, when Oog came out and bled on his steps, he wasn't on the camera either. He was only on the camera when he was several dozen feet away from his front stoop. But they're using these claims as evidence that no one else was around in the area and that this was self-inflicted.
They say the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And of course, his parents come over to the States for about 5 weeks. They're pushing the authorities to take action, because they feel like this case will just slip away. This is their only child. So they start telling them, you need to get into his accounts, including his email accounts, and see, was he contacting anyone? Did anyone contact him? Because Oog went outside for some reason. He was in his apartment with the door locked until sometime before 3 o'clock, and he opened his door and went outside. So what brought him outside? Because they don't see anything on the phone. Well, it took them 4 months for the police to finally look into these email accounts and get into that drive that's in the laptop.
And that's when they find out, like, he was on his laptop at some point during the night on dating sites. Is it possible that he had arranged a meeting with somebody that night? I mean, the last thing he said before he left the club was, I'm going to go find a girl. So did he get catfished and someone showed up? Did he sleep with the wrong person's woman and that person sought revenge? Was that date from earlier that night? a motive in some type, some way? Did he just happen to come across the wrong person at the wrong time who waited and maybe knocked on his door?
His father, Francois, made a comment that he was disappointed that a reward would have to be offered to maybe find information that would break this case open. But he posted a $100,000 reward. His family, they just want answers. It was the week of July 18th, 2007, when they returned to France. But they didn't stop. Just because they left the States didn't mean that they were stopping their activities to get answers. They then talked with the French authorities and said, please work this case.
And the French authorities reached out to the American authorities and were granted permission, because when you are a citizen of another country, you have that right. And luckily, our American government is pretty open to having other law enforcement come in and check things out. So French authorities came in black suits and ties and took this case on like nobody's business.
The family also hired a private investigator. Justin, we know that he was working. He was talking to people, friends of Oogs, chasing down leads, trying to construct and go through and test the different theories. But the investigators from France, they finished a report that was thousands of pages long. And all we know about that report, because it's never been published, or at least to my knowledge, it hasn't, was that this was, as the family and the friends thought, a homicide. But not only that, they also announced that they weren't going to say anything bad about the San Francisco Police Department. Now, I would venture to say that maybe this is a respect between authorities, but also maybe they understood the pressure that the San Francisco Police Department was under and their lack of resources.
Now, the French investigators, they had the manpower and the resources to interview up to 50 people from the club that night, all of his friends and coworkers. And they find out that, you know, his friends were planning on doing a motorcycle ride with him the next day. They learned from his boss that he hadn't called in to work. Everyone said he was in a very jovial mood the night of this incident. They all agreed that they felt that he was a flirt and that he did go out on a lot of dates. I don't want to victim blame here. People can go out on a lot of dates. But nowhere was there a suicide note found. Nowhere did he mention anything to anybody about this. And I get it. If you are depressed and suicidal, maybe you don't say anything to anybody. Maybe you do keep that to yourself. But Oog was a pretty passionate person. And according to some of his friends and exes, he was kind of an open book.
There is a lot made of the fact that he was dating many different people, always going out on dates. And I do feel like they take that a little too far. He was a bachelor.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like he was causing anyone any trouble. All the reports are is that Oog was a great guy. He just wasn't wanting to be tied down at the time. And so why do people make a big deal out of this? Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely victim blaming, saying he's living a high risk lifestyle by dating multiple women. Also, they look at this crime. They see that somebody's been brutally stabbed multiple times, and they think this is a crime of passion. This is somebody that was seeking revenge. And even some of his family and people that feel like this is foul play, they kind of buy into this might have been somebody who he had associated with because there was nothing stolen, blah, blah, blah. And I'm looking at this situation, Aaron, I'm thinking you don't have enough information from this crime scene, from these wounds. This could have been some rando off the street that knocked on his door, or he came out for a cigarette and they just happened to be sitting there on his stoop. There's no way to determine if this was a crime of passion, if this was an attempted robbery and Oog got away and shut the door behind him and deadbolted the door. I mean, his watch was ripped off. Maybe they were trying to steal his watch. Maybe this was just a random person that he had an encounter with. Or maybe this was somebody that he had agreed to meet online and invited over to his house. And it wasn't the person that he was expecting, and he was going to get robbed. There's not enough information there to determine if this was a crime of passion or if it's because of his lifestyle. So personally, my opinion, I throw all of that aside. Yes, you can follow those leads, but let's not look at this and say, oh, he was murdered because he was dating a lot. That's just stupid.
I just wanted to say, it's almost a disrespect toward Oog. And the one thing that you'll get when you read about this case, whether it's from Michelle Nix or from Neil Zarama or whoever that knew him, he was a good guy. This is a guy that was the type of person you'd want to go and have drinks with, go riding with. If you start going after Oog's lifestyle, it's just a disrespect because, like you said, there wasn't enough information to connect that to something. And even if there was, I don't want it to be harped on like, oh, he was doing this and he was doing that. There's even a suggestion that he would have dated married women. It doesn't matter. All that matters is to collect information. And Casillas, the lead investigator, himself admitted that they maybe didn't collect enough information. And he tries to cover it, I guess, in some way by saying, you could probably say that about every case.
Oh, yeah. And you probably could say that about every case. You can't scour every single inch of an apartment for every single murder. You have to just zone in on the critical areas of the crime scene. So I get it.
To me, what was missed is that the police seemed to focus on what they saw inside the apartment. And I would say if they were trying to solve this case, they should have focused on outside the apartment. Because inside the apartment, the only thing we've learned that pointed to anything was that watch. There was DNA testing done on that watch by the French authorities, and they found unknown DNA on it. That's a big clue. But what we do know is that Oog was safely inside of his place and something got him to open the door and step out. And that's when he was stabbed. So why they put so much emphasis on the inside of the apartment when it was deadbolted just doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because it's almost like they're saying, but inside the apartment. That's not the entire crime scene. In fact, I would argue the main crime scene is just outside the apartment door.
And they also hound and harp on the blood evidence, how it was dripping from him. And there's the neighbor's testimony that says it sounded like somebody ran away or left the apartment in a hurry. But they're saying, well, Oog is lumbering around slowly, and somebody that's in an altercation isn't doing that. How much did Oog have to drink that night? A lot. And now he's been stabbed 3 times, and we're expecting him to have absolute clarity, go to his phone and dial 911? No, he didn't dial 911 because they're saying he didn't want help, but he had the wherewithal to go clean off the knife or get rid of the knife. Again, from wounds that he probably would have bled out from within a minute. Cool story.
The more you look at this, the type of wounds that he suffered, the suicide angle just falls apart. And I'm someone who really would like to think that the police investigated this properly. But the fact is, you know, whether it's incompetence or lack of resources or just bad detective work, they're just not going to solve every case. We have to allow that. But in this case, it seems so obvious that someone ambushed him and that he deadbolted the door to protect himself from further injury. But by that point, like you said, he'd been drinking. That was backed up by the toxicology report, but not drugs. So what happened? Someone ambushed Oog de la Plaza and he managed to somehow close the door. I'm assuming that was what the slamming door was, because I believe that Mr. Denley was giving real testimony there. He protected his life by slamming that door, but it wasn't enough. He was already mortally wounded. 2 of the injuries that he had were mortal. I mean, even his lung was punctured. This is a guy that somehow cleaned a knife. No, I get that you can't solve every crime, but after a while, after this has kind of sunk in, and the case isn't officially closed yet, why can't they just look at it with fresh eyes and say, well, the theory we had before, it doesn't hold any water?
I mean, if they want to say it's suicide, then I want to see the hesitation puncture wounds. I want to see the suicide device because there isn't one. I want to hear about how Oog was depressed. I want some sort of pattern, some sort of evidence here. And they said that there wasn't any DNA or hair fibers or anything found in the apartment that showed that there was another assailant or suspect, but they didn't test the watch. Now, Aaron, I think that maybe this assailant could have ripped the watch off Oog in a robbery attempt, or maybe it just got ripped off in an altercation and it wasn't even a robbery. Maybe he was just being stabbed and putting his arm up, that watch got ripped off. Is the DNA on that watch, does it belong to the assailant? It could. It doesn't prove that there was an assailant, but the fact that the watch was ripped off of him and found underneath him crushed, the fact that his TV was knocked over, glasses broken, the crime scene goes from his front porch into the house. What? I've heard people say, I'm going to go with the experts. Well, the experts say this crime was suicide and Oog took his own life. So go with the experts, you know?
In 2009, the San Francisco Police Department commissioned a second, you could say, opinion on this case. They brought in another medical examiner to review the autopsy. This medical examiner, you know, went through all of the information, talked about the stab wound near his neck causing the most bleeding, said that the fatal blow severed an artery, punctured his lung, and he would have been dead within just a few minutes. And this medical examiner believes that Oog went back in, just like we said, after being stabbed, and that the attacker didn't go in after him. Again, this isn't something that took place over 10 minutes. This was something that happened relatively quickly. This report has a quote in it. If this gentleman had inflicted his own wounds in the kitchen area at the other end of the apartment and had walked bleeding to the front door, then one would expect bloody shoe prints and two trails of blood on the outside stairs and railing. But there's only one trail. The bloody shoe prints that he mentions were matched to Oog's shoes. Even further, the report goes on to say that the blood spatters on the wall appeared to have been shaken off from his arms while a knife was being inserted, then removed.
He did have some other wounds on his arm and face that could be considered defensive wounds, could be considered where he blocked a stab coming at him. But there's no explanation for these other wounds by at least the initial investigation.
Well, I think you're right. There was a cut on his head, which, you know, if he had thrown his arm up, may have blocked the assailant from stabbing him at that point, and the tip of the knife hit him in the head. There's also a bruise on his arm. Kind of makes sense, does it not, that he was fighting for his life? So I mentioned this DNA. This DNA didn't actually make it to public knowledge until 2012. This was August, and Oog's father, Francois, was saying, this proves that there was someone else around Oog that morning. Now, we know that people have their theories, Justin. They say, okay, it's murder, but why was he murdered? I want to say first, of course, that you had mentioned that it could have been a random attack. It's possible. Maybe when he was walking home, someone watched him and followed him. And after he was in the apartment a little bit, they ended up knocking on the door and he came out to see what was going on. And then they attacked him. But a lot of other people start looking at his circle of friends or his love interests.
Again, they go back to that idea that he was sleeping with so many different women that maybe he broke one of their hearts, or maybe one of them cheated on a loved one or a spouse or a boyfriend with him. And this was an act of revenge. I mean, at least the French authorities treated all of his friends and coworkers as suspects, as they should.
One of the suspects is Michelle Nix, his ex-girlfriend, who said she will always love Oog. And she made the comment that maybe if she was still much more involved in his life that he would still be around. People find that suspicious, I guess.
She was living on the other side of the country when this happened, so pretty sure she has a airtight alibi. I just want to be clear that we're not pointing a finger at Melissa, his ex.
No, these are just theories that have been proposed. And of course, people say, well, maybe she sent someone to kill him. But I find this far-fetched. I know everything's just an opinion, thinking about possibilities here. But Michelle Nix, she's been on this case trying to find justice for Oog for a long time. At least she was for a number of years. And I just don't feel that. It just doesn't make sense to me. If anything, she seems a little heartbroken that she's lost Oog.
Yeah, I mean, if you compare her actions to O.J. Simpson's actions of trying to find the perpetrators of who murdered his wife, or if you look at the actions of Christopher Watts or some other people who, you know, spouse has gone missing or been murdered, Melissa's actions definitely speak to her passion and caring for her ex-boyfriend.
People were also looking at Neil Zarama because he admitted that when he first met Oog, he was not a big fan, because here's this guy with the great French accent and who was basically saying that French music or French culture, everything was just better, it was superior. But then he says, well, as I got to know him, we became really good friends. They would go motorcycle riding together. But what about this promotion? Some say maybe Neil was again upset with his good buddy and decided that he wasn't going to just let things be anymore.
I absolutely think Neil was stabbing Oog on the front porch, screaming freedom fries, not French fries, and I deserved that promotion. Definitely a motive there.
Okay, so that's two suspects down. Neither one of us like these as suspects. There's this idea that someone might have seen Oog walking home, and that's when he was targeted. Edward Holloway was a homeless man who in January of 2010 had murdered another man by the name of Matthew A. Adams, and Holloway had attacked him with a knife. Matthew Adams was found dead in his room the morning after being attacked by Holloway. And the attack happened at 1:30 in the morning on January 16th, 2010. Now, Adams had initially survived the attack, but refused medical treatment and walked home.
Ouch.
Now, I don't know about you, Justin, but I've heard reports that sometimes people are stabbed and don't even really know they've been stabbed. I know that sounds weird, but it happens, I guess. I don't know if it's the shock, or I'm sure people have all kinds of reasons why this happens, but
you're absolutely right. I, not to refer back to my Peripheral podcast, but I had a whole episode about a guy, the episode's called Stabbed in the Back, and he was literally stabbed in the back. He thought he was punched and he walked home. And by the time he got home, he was essentially passing out from blood loss because he'd been stabbed in the kidney.
Holloway had several charges and arrests on his record that included battery, assault with a deadly weapon. There were 11 warrants for public drunkenness and theft, as well as drug charges. So maybe Holloway could have been somehow tied to this case.
Pattern fits, the profile fits. And whether or not this was a crime of passion or an attempted robbery gone afoul, I don't know. I don't think we have enough pieces of the puzzle to determine that. So I wouldn't be surprised if this was a random act of violence or an attempted robbery that Oog said, you're not getting my watch tonight.
And I'm not trying to say that Holloway did it, because these are just suspects that were proposed by people over time. And I think with Holloway, it doesn't necessarily have to be him. There's just that possibility that someone targeted Oog on the way home. Just because someone doesn't successfully commit the robbery, that has nothing to do with their intent. The door was deadbolted, so Oog got that door shut and was able to prevent whoever it was attacking him from coming in.
I think it's obvious from at least the blood evidence that you were speculating on earlier that he was attacked outside. That's where the blood starts, and it trails into the apartment. And then there's pools of blood and drips of blood all over the apartment, but there's no drips of blood leading back out. So this, I can say with relative certainty, the attack happened on the porch and he ran back into his house and got that door closed. Everything else is him bleeding and trying to survive.
A lot is made over what happened here. And Justin, normally I think on a case, and if I can't figure it out, it stays with me a long time. This case may not do that to me because the inability of the police to properly investigate this case is what stands out to me more than the was it a suicide or was it a homicide angle. I think that's pretty clear. I think it's a homicide, and I believe the evidence backs that up. So for me, this is an open case. Let's get it worked on. I know they're going to say, well, we've had this many murders since then. Are we just going to let this one die? I mean, has it been too long? Did they not collect enough evidence? Is that where we're at with this case?
If the DNA that they collected from the watch gets a hit, that's how this case will be solved. Here's the other thing is, why did the police not investigate this properly? What is their motivation to deem this a suicide and walk away? Now, I realize that the medical examiner said undetermined. I realize that the lead investigator said he went into this thinking it was a homicide. But in retrospect and in time past, I'm really curious if anyone has lifted a finger on the American side to investigate this case.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. Along with premium fabrics and finishes, how can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
And Aaron, something I didn't know about suicide. I was looking up facts on health websites, government websites. You know, depending on if it's a man or a woman and their age, men take their own lives usually with firearms. And then hanging or suffocation is usually the next most common way somebody takes their own life. Then poisoning. And then other types of injury, and then falling. Guess which one is the least likely way? It's cutting or piercing. And when it does come to self-wounding for suicide, it's typically a neck wound or wrist cutting. Stabbing oneself is even a smaller fraction of how one takes their own life. So if you take the percentile of how somebody takes their own life, you have to get all the way to the bottom of the stats before you get self-wounding. And then to get to stabbing and not slashing oneself, it's even more unlikely. That stat alone should give any law enforcement pause when they come across a crime scene where somebody has been stabbed. This is just stats and figures. This is just math.
Well, as we know, they haven't officially listed as suicide, but I think that's what we believe, they believe. And yet they leave the case open so that they can let it die on the vine, I guess. Or maybe one day they'll get lucky and a tip will come in or a hit on DNA and the case will end up being solved.
If they're run ragged, they're short on resources, they can't investigate as much. If there's higher profile cases they have to look into, they're going to get the priority. It's one thing to say that the police didn't investigate it properly. This case is unsolved. It's another thing to say that law enforcement was overwhelmed and just pushed this one off to the side and decided not to look into it. I know that's a public opinion out there. I'm not going to say it's mine. I'm just putting out some of the perceptions and views that people have about this case.
I like what you said about the DNA. It would be nice if we knew that the police in San Francisco were submitting this DNA and that if a hit happened, that they would then take further action. So I think there is a chance for them to redeem themselves in a way in the future with this case.
That's how I look at it, is they have one piece of the puzzle there that could be the key. And I hope that something comes out of that. The theories and explanations of he's moving slowly, so therefore he wasn't in a struggle. Well, the guy's drunk and he's bleeding. I don't expect him to be moving quickly. And that's placing the attack inside the apartment when I think it's obvious it happened outside the apartment. The idea that the camera didn't pick up anyone else. Well, we've already said that the camera angle was not perfect. And as I said, Oog only shows up in one frame when he's walking slowly through the vantage point of this camera. Somebody else running away, who knows? You cannot use the security camera footage as any sort of evidence that nobody else was in the area. The fact that the knife was not found and they somehow claim that he got rid of it or cleaned it off, even though they did test the knives in the kitchen and in the sink, no blood was found on them. So it's almost as if they're just making up excuses at that point. I personally don't think anyone in their right mind could buy their own BS like that.
I had mentioned that Oog was very much into philosophy. The only note found that was in his apartment was just that. It was philosophy. And written on it was, learn as if you were to live forever, live as if you were to die tomorrow.
And that's truly how Oog lived his life. And I respect him for that.
If people want to read more or see more on this case, there is a 48 Hours Mystery episode, A Case for Murder. And there's a pretty good website, hoodline.com, that has an article from 2013 titled In Pursuit of Justice, The Story of Oog de la Plaza, that has some additional details as well as some pictures.
And check out The Trail Went Cold from Robin. He's a great guy.
Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.